This is Radio Superior 1951, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s. This is a true story of our past, so step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the land of 10,000 beautiful lakes. Jack McKenna speaking. It's Tuesday, April 10th, 1951. Lou Martin has the 6 o'clock news. Rapid Ray has the big news that former Superior native Ernie Nevers has been named to the all-time All-American College football team.
This is great news. We've got Ole Haugsrud and Ernie's classmates to tell stories about our own local hero.
It just goes to show what happens when you leave town. Ernie Nevers becomes a hero, and I get taken for granted.
We don't know how lucky we are to have you in our midst.
Precisely. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Superior Water, Light, and Power Company, urging mothers to get an electric clothes dryer. It makes wash day so much simpler. And good evening, Lou.
Good evening, Jack, and good listeners. General MacArthur wants a freer hand in fighting the Red Chinese in Korea, while Allied troops make gains against stiff resistance. We begin our shortwave world report from MacArthur's headquarters in Japan.
This is Tokyo calling. Harrison Salisbury, your correspondent. General Douglas MacArthur made it plain to his superiors today that he wants more latitude in the Korean War. He authorized a spokesman to sharply deny news reports that Army Secretary Frank Pace had reprimanded him for recent public statements deemed to be verging on politics. The spokesman added that since the reports were carried by Reuters, British news agency, quote, probably the wish was father to the thought, unquote, with some British voices clamoring for MacArthur's scalp. This seems like fresh defiance from the United Nations commander-in-chief. Informed sources say that Mac stood pat during a two-hour conference yesterday with Secretary Pace on views that had provoked a storm of controversy in Washington, London, Paris, and elsewhere. These views include his belief that all-out war must be waged against communism wherever the threat appears, that it would be a mistake to neglect Asia in order to emphasize the defense of Europe. Informed sources say MacArthur not only has asked Pace for more troops, but for a freer hand in fighting the Korean War. Presumably, Mac is seeking the right to bomb Chinese bases in Manchuria, which supply communist troops in Korea. The general has railed frequently at what he calls the privileged sanctuary of Manchuria. Critics accuse MacArthur of departing from military problems to engage in discussions of a political nature. The general obviously believes what he says, that UN forces can win in Korea only by expanding the war to Red China, that otherwise the Allies face a devastating stalemate. There are growing indications that the general and his aides are appealing to American public opinion, either over or around the Truman administration. For one thing, a close check of reporters' editorial content is made here. The issue embraces more than whether Red China should be bombed and Chinese nationalist troops employed. It involves the fundamental question of whether the Western powers should concentrate upon Europe's defense to the relative exclusion of Asia. It goes back to the early bitter days of the Pacific War when MacArthur was passed by in favor of defeating Hitler's Europe. Now, in his view, the United Nations is involved in a vital shooting war in the Orient, but fresh troops are going to Europe to guard against Soviet action instead. In Tokyo, this is Harrison Salisbury.
Hello, this is Max Jordan on the front lines north of the 38th parallel. Allied troops reached the southern shores of the sprawling Hwa Chon Reservoir today, but heavy red mortar fire stopped them short of the big North Korean dam and hydroelectric plant. In the air, American F-86 Sabre jets shot down one Russian-type MiG-13 jet fighter and damaged another. The air battle was fought at low levels over Mig Alley near Sunyuju in northwest Korea. There's bitter communist resistance on the Western Front as Allied patrols probe deeper into Red Korea. Intelligence reports say the Reds are sending more troops there. Today's heaviest fighting whirled near the Hwasong Reservoir. American tanks bubbled northward on the Chuncheon-Hwasong Road through the narrow Pukan River Gorge. They are putting the squeeze on 200 to 300 Reds who had been driven back between the western end of the dam and the river. With the Allied troops, this is Max Jordan.
This is the nation's capital, Hightower here. President Truman will have been in the White House 6 years on Thursday, April 12th. They have been tremendous years, as tough as any president ever faced. How has he made out? When he succeeded President Roosevelt, World War II was still on. He led the country to peace and reconversion to the greatest prosperity the country has ever had. Now he's leading the country back to prepare for war. When he entered the White House 6 years ago, he had great popular support. Now the polls say his popularity is gone. But while Mr. Truman sat in the White House and the country grew rich and fat after the war, communism spread like a flame in other parts of the world. During the war, about 190 million people were under communism in Russia. Now the number is about 735 million, counting China, the satellites, and North Korea. And at this moment, this country and its Western allies are girding for what may be World War III with the communist allies. Whether Mr. Truman, short of war, could have prevented the spread of communism anywhere is a source of much debate, particularly when China is involved. Certainly, he sparked the Marshall Plan, which is credited with not only stopping the spread of communism to Western Europe, but even with pushing it in retreat there. He pushed the new American role of world champion into Asia, too, when he rushed American troops into Korea to stop communism there. That is a seesaw fight, with the outcome still uncertain, with much confusion now about our goal there. He has been on the receiving end of criticism without much evidence of that aggressive spirit he showed when he campaigned for the presidency in 1948, when everyone thought it was a lost cause. In D.C., this is John Hightower.
This is London calling. Webb Miller, your reporter. Winston Churchill's Conservative baited a parliamentary trap with ration cheese last night and defeated Britain's socialist government by 18 votes. It was no formal motion of censure, and the Labourite, disregarding the demands of delighted Tories, viewed it as a minor matter not requiring Prime Minister Clement Attlee's government to resign. The vote was sprung by the Conservatives on a seemingly routine and comparatively calm debate on the question of Britain's cheese ration. The government had ordered a cutback to 2 ounces a week. The Conservatives wanted the previous 3 ounces. Churchill's Conservatives won. In London, this is Webb Miller.
Argentina's government-controlled Congress meets tomorrow to settle the fate of La Prensa, Costa critic of President Juan Perón and one of America's greatest newspapers. Forced sale of the newspaper appears certain. On orders of the Perón-dominated Congress, La Prensa offices and its printing plant were seized March the 20th. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Jack McKenna has this message from Superior Water, Light, and Power Company.
Right you are, Lewis. And I have a good message for the ladies. They'll love me after this one. Eliminate drying drudgery. See what I mean? Wet clothes are heavy and mean to handle indoors or outside. Take the work out of wash day with an automatic clothes dryer. Put an end to lifting, carrying, stretching. Say goodbye to weather worries by having your appliance dealer install an automatic clothes dryer in your home now from Superior Water, Light, and Power Company.
Lou? Rescue efforts have ended in a mine disaster on Minnesota's Iron Range. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has the story via long-distance telephone line. It's been a terrible last 4 days up there, Mike.
Yes, Lou, it is a sad time with hopes of survivors dashed this evening. Just a few minutes ago, rescue digging ended at Evelyn's Spruce Iron Mine with the recovery of the second of two miners trapped by a cave-in last Friday. Rescue crews composed of the best miners on the Mesabi Range worked 89 hours before finding the body of 43-year-old Frank Putzel. Putzel was crushed under the debris that almost filled the tunnel that he and 53-year-old Anton Korcha were working in 400 feet below the surface. Korcha's body was removed yesterday. Doctors say both men must have died instantly. Three shifts of 30 miners each have been laboring night and day since the Evelyn Spruce Mine disaster, with hope that the two men were still alive. Friends and families have been holding a prayerful vigil since Friday as rescuers dug. Lou?
KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson in Evelyn. Gangs are being rounded up in Milwaukee. Chuck Quimbach has the news.
A campaign to wipe out gangs of teenage hoodlums here is underway. While police continue to round up boys involved in the weekend beatings of seven persons, District Attorney William J. McCauley dusted off a seldom-used statute which allows prosecution on criminal charges against youths 16 to 18 years old. McCauley says he and Police Inspector Hubert E. Dax agreed on full use of the statute, giving concurrent jurisdiction to criminal and juvenile courts for teenage lawbreakers. Parents of 12 boys who have been picked up following Friday night's beatings by bands of marauding toughs have to report to the district attorney's office Thursday. Quoting McCauley, "I want to know why parents have not put a halt to these gang activities. It's a shameful thing that parents never ask their sons and daughters, where have you been and what did you do?" In Milwaukee, this is Chuck Quirnbach speaking.
Superior School Superintendent Leslie Johnson and the school board hired the following elementary school teachers. Isla Trast will be paid $3,300, while Beverly Johnson, Mary Manquist, Betty Lang, and Mary Ellen Edgett, Bernard O'Connell, and Nancy Love will be paid $2,800. Mr. Johnson told the board that on his recent recruitment trip for new teachers, he found that colleges are training more people and that Superior has a salary scale very favorable for obtaining new teachers. Giants of the Great Lakes are shaking off their winter lethargy today in anticipation of a peak season of hauling during the navigation year. Eight ships have been tied up through the winter at the Knutson Brothers Shipbuilding and Dry Dock Company at North 3rd Street and Clough Avenue. The ships are being repaired for the 1951 season. Meanwhile, rumblings of ore rushing into the dock pockets are being heard at the Great Northern Docks. According to GM Superintendent C.O. Hooker, both the Coast Guard Cutter Woodrush and the Icebreaker Mackinac are awaiting orders to move out into Lake Superior to break ice. An ice jam at Duluth Superior is stalling shipping for a second day in a row. 15 freighters of the Pittsburgh Steamship and Interlake Steamship Companies rest at anchor in the Sioux Harbor in eastern Lake Superior, all bound for the Twin Ports, whose harbor is blocked by ice-blown ice. That's something. The Twin Ports, whose harbor is blocked by wind-blown ice. And well done to Patterson Cub Scout Pack 26. The boys displayed maps of Finland, Norway, Switzerland, Sweden, and Israel for its Scouting Around the World project. Pack Master Albert Hahn presented achievement awards to Stephen Johnland, Spencer Rogers, William Renstrand. Billy Renstrand received the Bobcat insignia as well. Jack.
Way to go, Cubbies. Say, that ice jam is tough on sailors, Lou.
Yes, it is, sitting around waiting like that.
No, I mean, when the ships get stuck in the ice, they have to get out and push those big freighters. That's no fun.
That isn't funny.
Ever try chipping through 3 feet of ice? That's tough, too.
On with the forecast, if you please.
Lou Martin, ladies and gents, the best straight man around. The forecast for this Tuesday evening, April 10th, 1951... cold with a low tonight of 28 with snow flurries. Tomorrow cloudy with a strong northerly breeze and a high of 36 degrees, which isn't very high. It's music time, though. Here's Joe Stafford and Jambalaya on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Tonight see my machete mio. Kick guitar, fill fruit jar, and be gay, oh. Son of a gun, we'll have big fun on the bayou. Well, goodbye, Joe. Me gotta go, me oh my oh. Me gotta go for the Piro down the bayou. Oh, my John, the sweetest one, me oh my oh. Son of a gun, we'll have big fun on the bayou.
Jambalaya coffee's pie, Billy Gumbo. Cause tonight I'm gonna see my Michelle Mio. Kick guitar, fill through jar, and be gay, oh. Son of a gun, we'll have big fun on the bio.
Chibi Doe, Fonda, no, the place is buzzing. Kinfolk come to see my John by the dozen. Dressed in style, go hog wild, me oh my oh. Son of a gun, we'll have big fun on the bio.
Jambalaya and a crawfish pie, Billy Gumbo. Cause tonight I'm gonna see my Michelle Mio.
Pedo. Oh, I'll catch all the fish in the bio. Swap my mum to buy my John what he needo. Son of a gun, we'll have big fun on the bio.
Jambalaya and a crawfish pie, Billy Gumbo. Cause tonight I'm gonna see my Michelle Mio.
Joe Stafford and Jambalaya on station KUWS. Folks, tonight's the last chance you'll have to see and hear the Senator Estes Kefauver Senate New York Crime Probe. The Palace Theater is showing 53 thrilling minutes of the day-by-day highlights of explosive testimony. You'll hear from former New York Mayor William O'Dwyer, Frank Costello, Virginia Hill, Bugsy Moran, and Greasy Thumb Gusick exactly as it happened. Then stay tuned for the motion picture Getting Gertie's Garter with Maureen O'Hara. Let's get her garter. I hear it's a very snappy story. Get it? Garter?
Oh,
snappy?
That's enough.
Thanks, guys. Now the man of the hour with the story of the year. Here's Rapid Ray Paulson with a big snappy news about Ernie Nevers. Hi, Ray.
Hi, Jake. Whoa, Nellie. Where do you begin with a story as big as former Superior resident Ernie Nevers? So I brought my good friend Dean Myron along to help out. Say hi, Dean.
Hi, Dean.
Yeah. Now, today's big news. Ernie Nevers, former Superior gridiron and basketball great and national All-American football player and baseball star, has been named to college football's all-time All-America team.
Nevers now stands an excellent chance of being named to the National Football Hall of Fame at New Brunswick, New Jersey. He was chosen for the distinguished honor through a nationwide poll by the press service of the country's newspaper and radio sports editors.
The former Superiorite began his career on the city's playing fields. He began his sensational rise to football acclaim with the Central High squad of 1918. He went on from there to play college ball and take an All-American position with the Stanford University football squad. Then he played professional ball, starting with the Duluth Eskimos and ending as coach of the Chicago Cardinals.
Nevers is on the first squad at the fullback position ahead of Felix Doc Blanchard of Army and John Kimbrough of Texas A&M.
Stories of Ernie Nevers are countless since the time he played ball in Superior, marked by a determination to win. Nevers never gave in, even for a minute, while time remained on the clock. During his long career, he almost always played for a winning ball club.
I'm getting dizzy listening to these guys go back and forth.
This Dream 11 plus second and third teams, first ever chosen on such a broad scale, are being picked in a nationwide poll by the Associated Press to provide nominations for the National Football Hall of Fame.
Nevers completes a backfield that includes Walter Eckersall, the famous little running and kicking star of Chicago at quarterback, and the immortal Red Grange of Illinois, and Jim Thorpe of the Carlisle Indians at halfback.
No player has yet been named to the $5 million shrine at Rutgers University in New Brunswick, New Jersey, but most, if not all, the players named on these three teams will be among the first selections.
Stop swinging your head from Dean to Ray and Ray to Dean.
Now you're making me dizzy.
This line-splintering ball carrier adds goal line punch and all-around efficiency to a foursome that has no weakness.
The ruddy-faced blonde bulldozer from Superior played at Stanford in 1923, 24, and 25 under Coach Glenn Pop Warner, one of the sport's eminent pioneers. During the 3 years that Nevers was in the backfield, Stanford won 21 games, lost 5, and tied 1.
Nevers was an exceptionally hard running back, a splendid passer, and rock-ribbed stalwart on defense. He was named fullback on the Associated Press 1925 All-America team.
Nevers hardly knew what it was to lose, so it's a bit ironic that one of the greatest individual performances was given in a Stanford defeat. That was the famous Rose Bowl game of January 1st, 1925, when Stanford met Notre Dame with its four horsemen and seven mules. It was one of Pasadena's most sensational struggles, with Warner's wizardry matched against Knute Rockne's resourcefulness and the all-around brilliance of Nevers against Elmer Layden, Harry Stuhldreher, and company.
They say Nevers' plunging was never great, and he was the individual star of the game, although Layden's pass catching and pass interceptions led the Irish to a 27-10 victory.
Nevers now lives at Mill Valley, California.
Whew, that's a lot.
But there's more.
I don't think I can take it anymore.
I'm afraid you'll have to, old chum. So here goes.
This is Dashing Dean Myron with Rapid Ray Paulson,
reminding you that everyone loves a good sport. Jake?
Ooh, again, boy. Thanks, fellas. Let's slow things down now with Mel Torme and Bewitched on the Martin and McKenna and Nevers, Nevers Land show. Oh, boy.
I'm wild again, beguiled again, a simpering, whimpering child again. Bewitched, bothered, and bewildered, I'm on. Couldn't sleep and wouldn't sleep when love came and told me I shouldn't sleep. Bothered and bewildered, am I? Lost my heart, but what I live, she is cold, I agree. She can laugh, but I love it, although the love's on me. I'll sing to her each spring to her and long for the day when I'll cling to her. Bothered and bewildered, I'm all. Lost my heart, but what of it? She is cold, I agree. She can laugh, but I love it, although the love's on me. to her, each spring to her, and long for the day when I cling to her, bewitched, bothered, and bewildered,
Mel Torme and Bewitched on station KUWS.
Hey, Lou, I know you feel kind of left out today, since sports is the big news.
That'll be left field in sports lingo.
But I know you love college football, and I've lined up an interview for you I think you'll enjoy. Joining us for today's momentous announcement is one of the famed four horsemen of Notre Dame, Mr. Jim Crowley. Go ahead, Lou.
Excellent. One of Knute Rockne's four horsemen. You're a pal, Ray. Good evening, Mr. Crowley, sir.
A newsman, huh? I don't like newsmen. Sports reporters are bad enough, but the newsmen, I don't like newsmen much.
I apologize, but it pays the light bill. Now, Mr. Crowley.
Well, Rock wasn't crazy about newsmen either.
Well, if you could do me the honor of tolerating me, Mr. Crowley, we can get on with the story about Ernie Evers.
Yeah, it was the Rose Bowl, 1925, and Nevers made more trouble for the Irish than any two men. He'd crack one side of the line for 5 yards, then the other for 6. We'd pick ourselves off the ground and look to the sideline for help from the Rock.
That would be Notre Dame coach Knute Rockne.
Listen up to me, boy. I don't like being interrupted. I don't like newsmen much. So anyways, we're hoping the Rock will send someone in to tell us what we're doing wrong. Finally, the one-man drive-by, Nevers, brought the ball to our 3-yard line, and then our prayers appeared to be answered. From the sidelines dashed a big sophomore named McMullen. He was so excited at playing in the Rose Bowl before 80,000 people, he forgot whose place he was to take. He simply told the ref, "I'm for Notre Dame." Well, we held Nevers on the first play, called time, and huddled around McMullen to hear the message that would dam the dike. Stammering and stuttering, Mac finally gulped, "Boys, Rock says that the trouble is you're not stopping that Nevers. Ernie Nevers. He's a man's man. He deserves being on the all-time All-American team."
Thank you, Mr. Jim Crowley, one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse for the 1925 Notre Dame team.
What'd you say your name was?
Paulson. Ray Paulson.
All right, Paulson. Thanks for not asking a bunch of dopey questions. So long.
Goodbye. And thanks, Ray.
Yeah, that's what friends are for, buddy, old pal.
Here's Sammy Kay with vocals by Betty Barclay. And I'm a Big Girl Now on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Me and my childhood sweetheart have come to the parting of the ways. He still treats me like he did in our baby days. I'm a little bit older and a little bit bolder since both of us were 3. I'm a little more padded. Something new has been added. He ought to take one good look at me. I'm a big girl now. I wanna be daring like a big girl now. When Daddy tells those certain jokes, it isn't fair. He tells me I'm too young and makes me take the air. But I could tell a couple that would curl his hair. big girl now. I'm a big girl now. I wanna be handled like a big girl now. I'm tired of being babied like a kid of three. I'm tired of having chaperones to follow me. I wanna have some secrets in my diary. I'm a big girl now. I'm a big girl now. I wanna be cuddled like a big girl now. I'm through with going to movies with my Uncle Tim. Through with going to picnics with my old Aunt Min. I wanna go to Mexico with, you know him. I'm a big girl now. I'm a big girl now. I wanna be wanted like a big girl now. I'm tired of staying home each evening after dark. Tired of being dynamite without a spark. I wanna learn what fellows do in Central Park. I'm a big girl now.
Sammy Kay and I'm a Big Girl Now. On station KUWS.
And It's Your Life, Ernie Nevers. And one of the men who knows him as well as anyone is Mr. Ole Hogsrud.
Know him. Watched him play in high school. And I brought him from Stanford to go pro and play with the Duluth Eskimos. Yeah, you could say I knew Ernie Nevers.
So you go way back together.
In college, he was known as Stanford's blonde blockbuster. And when he went pro, he was the blonde blizzard. But when he went out for the Superior High team, that farm boy didn't know a football from a squash. This is the honest-to-God's truth. His first assignment on the school football team was tackling dummy. Coach Earl Tubbs told him to stand still in the sawdust pit and let the other boys tackle him. But that didn't last long. Coach Tubbs had that big blonde Swede playing in.
Nevers was raised in Superior, but he's not from Superior.
Nope. Born Ernest Alonzo Nevers, named after the famous football coach Amos Alonzo Stagg.
So, Ernie was almost Amos, huh?
This is the guy who interrupts, isn't he?
Oh, he's terrible that way. He's been doing that for years.
And this guy?
That's Lou Martin. He's feeling left out today.
Well, back to my story about Ernie. He was born in Tiny Wheelbarrow, Minnesota.
Tiny Wheelbarrow?
Wheelbarrow.
These fellas get on your nerves, Ray.
It's my cross that I have to bear.
In 1918, the Central High Vikings had the greatest team in Wisconsin history. They were 8-0, scoring 427 points and allowing just 7.
Hey, got a favorite memory from that 1918 team?
Hey, I remember one story. Man, oh man, that was something. This high school team took on the college army training team and beat them 27-0. But much of that game was played in semi-darkness from the smoke pouring down on the city from the Great Cloquet Fire of 1918. Ashes got in everyone's eyes, and it was hard to breathe. Morgan Murphy was playing right guard, and he was coughing to beat the band. What a bunch of guys. Most had nicknames. There was Duke Thorgerson, Fat Steele, he was our quarterback, Happy Monroe, Buddy Nelson, John Bone Hancock, Ted Werrett.
What'd they call him?
Ted. But alas, Nevers' family moved to Santa Rosa, California, 90 miles north of San Francisco, before his senior year.
Thanks, Superior football promoter Ole Hogsrud.
The greatest tribute paid to Ernie Nevers probably was by Coach Pop Warner. Pop also coached the great Jim Thorpe. But he says Ernie was the best he ever coached.
Everyone's got a story about Ernie Nevers, you know. So, folks, we'll take your telephone calls and hear your stories about our hometown hero right after the McGuire sisters on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. I hate to leave you, but...
o'clock in the morning. Baby, I just can't treat you right. Oh, I hate to leave you, baby. Don't mean maybe, because I love you so. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. I hate to leave you, but I really must say good night, sweetheart. Good night.
Now my mother and my father, they might hear if I stay
too long.
McGuire Sisters and Good Night, Sweetheart. Good night. Now let's take your calls, folks.
Once again, I don't think this is a good idea. It never works.
Show some respect for our listeners, Lou. Okay, let's go to the first caller. Your name and where you're calling from, please.
What? Your name is Jack and you're in Superior. What kind of a question is that?
I meant, what is your name and where are you?
This here's Wally Manning. I'm out at Station B.
So what's your story about Ernie Nevers, Mr. Manning?
Hey, speak up there, sonny.
What's your story about Ernie Nevers?
Bernie Nevers was a crumb bum. He still owes me money. What do you want to know about Bernie anyway?
Okay, then. Let's take another caller.
Hello. This is Marge from Billings Park. Lou Martin sounds cute. Is he as handsome as he sounds?
Except in the morning, yes. Caller 3, what's your story about Ernie Nevers?
Throw the bum out and Pete Truman.
Caller 4, hello. Your story about Ernie Nevers.
Well, this is Joy in Central Park. All I have to say is, what a man.
Are you talking about Lou, Bernie Evers, or Truman?
Well, Ernie Nevers, of course. We were an item in high school. What shoulders and cute ears. Oh, cute ears, too. Do you have his phone number, Jack?
Thank you, Joy, from East End. Now, wasn't that interesting?
Interesting? That was terrible.
I thought the part about Nevers owing that fellow money and the fact that he has cute ears was very insightful.
And there was that caller who thinks you're cute, Lewis.
But
Jack's got a point. It usually is interesting.
See, Lou? Stay tuned for Cavalcade of America, Baby Snooks, and Bob Hope coming up next. We'll be back same time, same place on your radio dial, the good Lord willing, that is, and President Truman isn't listening. For Rapid Ray, Lou Martin and the gang, this is Jack McKenna wishing one and all a good night.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1951, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Duke Skorich, Don Hansen, Danielle Kading, John Munsell, Ray Paulson, Paul Guggenheimer, Gene Andreese. All events reported on Radio Superior 1951 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.